And I was going to ask you about the new inlets down there.
Well,
the new inlet bridge, I've never seen water under it.
Yeah, it's filled in. It filled in on its own.
That one did?
The bridge goes over and sand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So the one that was just a couple years ago was open.
The artificial bridge? It's still there, yeah. But it goes over sand.
Okay, so that's closed up. That one closed up.
It's got
up.
Cool ripples and shit.
That was deep there for a while, right?
It was insane fishing when it first cut through there.
Yeah,
there was a lot of water. You know, and then I think for the fish that were close to that area, you know, that was just like, oh, man,
yeah.
They opened a Shoney's.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And that's
right.
How it was. When there was tide changing, there was fish chewing. I mean, it was crazy there for a while.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just filled in. It did what most inlets do on Hatteras Island. It did its own job and filled itself in. There's still, I guess they feel like this is going to be a permanent weak spot.
Right.
So they are in the process of building a permanent bridge there.
Cool.
Over the course of the next few years.
The way to go there, like, and especially the P Island area too. That spot is so thin. I mean, basically the Outer Banks is. You look at really, it's a sandbar.
That's just a sandbar.
Yeah.
And those.
It is literally
natural,
a barrier island.
Yeah. The natural way those things they're living and breathing, you know, structures and the ocean punches through an inlet and it brings more salt water to the back and it refreshes back here and then it closes up and then it opens up another spot. And P Island is so thin and small and it's low and there's not a lot of dunes in a lot of that spot. And like that one spot right there where Dampy, I mean, that's coming.
The S-turns, that's considered one of the highest erosion rate areas in the continental U.S.
You can look at it and remember when the hurricane that hit Jersey, was it last year or is it
Sandy,
right? On the news, they showed this spot where it punched through, and there's a bridge going to it, and where the ocean punched through. I looked at the satellite map of that same inlet, and yes, it was going to punch through. It looks exactly like the type of areas that would punch through on the Outer Banks. Exactly. Big open water in the back, big land that comes through, and it's a real small little strip of land. No shit.
Just a big flat, and then a dune, and not even a dune there
because all the houses were there, so not even a dune there anymore. And it was just a punch right through.
So all the waves have to do is go through houses.
Yeah, and yeah, it was like the one house was in the center. But yeah, like P Island, and I guess are they? You know, they were trying to move sand to it and build bulkheads or whatever, all that stuff, and that. Usually what I've seen is whenever you add something like that, it doesn't so much help the beach as much as displace sand.
Well, it displaces everything. You know, there's been a lot of argument that when they first built the jetty at Oregon Island on the south side, that created an unbelievable amount of erosion now down the beach because it's deflecting that water.
Yes.
And people got to understand in such a...
It's just the
dynamics of the Outer Banks.
Once again, like that, boom.
Gulf Stream's right on top of you, Labrador's right on top of you, currents can be insane, and so it's deflecting, and it could have effects for 40, 50 miles,
mm-hmm.
you know, of that island. It's just really hard to tell. And so, sure, most people are going to say, best thing you can do is let nature take its course with that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. The problem that lies is that there's 4,000 people there that's hinging on a free-flowing road, not a ferry, or this, that, and the other.
Because that's the only way
they're going to make a living.
Yeah, that's
the only way they are going to make a living. So there is your dilemma.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do? And so there's no easy answer, and it's not going to be easy for the people that stay on Hatteras.
What about
the bridge idea?
I thought that was the best idea, going from Rodanthe to Organella.
Once again, I agree with you there. Two things that are easy to point out there is, one, wind advisories for that distance.
Yeah,
and you get a lot of campers, and people got, you know, their little turtle luggage carrier on top.
But even if you
got to worry about that a lot.
Even if they were going across the bridge, they would be stopped by wind advisory. So there's pretty much nothing on P Island, you know, from Rodanthe to Oregon Island.
Right, but the thing about it is, really, is the cost of it. The cost of it.
Yeah.
And then the third, which is what a bridge is, how
long is that from Oregon Island?
17 miles.
Yeah.
On elevated road.
Yeah,
over sand.
Yeah. Because they'll probably set it back.
Yeah.
Over. Yeah, over the sound or something like that.
That would have, you'd want to shoot it out into the sound, get it as far out in a way as you could, and that's how it was proposed, kind of swing out half moon and come back in. And once again, viable idea, another point that people want to argue, and it's a good argument, is at that point, the road leading up Pea Island would then be just taken out and no longer taken care of because that sits on a federal wildlife reserve.
Right. And they're
actually concessioned to run Highway 12.
Right.
Once they get a little bit off this easement that the government allows them to use, then you're all on government property. So if you don't need the road because you built this bridge, then we're going to probably take this road away from you.
Right.
And so...
And I think about that.
Yeah, and so that's another big issue, man. It's
Pea Island.
Pea Island.
Until you get to Rodanthe, that's all. And then you'd be able to drive back four-wheel drive until New Inlet or whatever.
Yeah.
Unless, until it got so jacked up you couldn't.
But you can't drive up there now. So they would never let you drive. That's the thing. People know that that would be the end of good public access to, like, the south side of Oregon Inlet. That's how they feel about it.
Yeah, you're right, because that is a good fishery. I mean, that's a lot of stuff happens right there, and it's all that access. You would lose all that access.
Pea Island
and
has incredible fishing, man.
That access to
the fishing could be off the chain along Pea Island at times. Everything.
I didn't think about that road part of losing that
Where's
road.
The Canadian? Canadian Hole is
in between Avon and Buxton on the right-hand side.
That's
generally where you're going to see all the kayakers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The water's real shallow, or not kayakers, kiteboarders.
Kiteboarders,
and the water's really short or shallow, you know. So
it's like world destination and shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, this is not a race, like a
I've caught some fish over there, but
this negative time, term.
Kiteboarders.
Yeah, but there's so much traffic.
It's not a negative term. Like, they come from Canada to kiteboard here.
That's
it. Windsurfing. A lot of windsurfing.
I mean, it's just ideal. The water, once again, is shallow. It's a great place to do these things.
You fall off and stand up, basically.
Oh, yeah. And some of these, if you were a newbie and you fell in some of these spots, you might be leaving in traction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that shallow, but once again, great training grounds, great place. You know, a lot of families go over there, a lot of paddle boarders that are just renting and stuff will go over there. Like I said, there's fish in that area to pick at, but it's...
No,
it's
I was just asking, like, I couldn't remember exactly which two it was in between.
Yeah.
When I drove down there a couple weeks ago on the ultimate offshore...
Oh, yeah, did you go? That's right, you got.
Oh, yeah, I do. I had them holding. They were hanging on.
I'm hoping, you know, pretty much every time I get anything lined up to go offshore, man, I'm getting blown out anymore.
Oh, yeah. Dude,
I can't seem to put it together right now to save my life, and it's killing me.
It's been crazy, man. It's been way.
But the thing is, even when you look at it, like I was thinking. Originally, like Tuesday, Wednesday might be nice to go out, and then they were kind of showing 2 to 4, 3 to 5, and I'm like, I don't know. And then I have friends that come in, and they're like, oh man, Rob, from a kayaking standpoint out there, it was ideal. I'm like, dang. You know, can't win.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can't win with that stuff, but I'm dying to get out again, man. That's
you just got to get rigged up to take pictures on the boat and have your boat strapped to the front.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm dying to get out too, man.
Yeah. That's what I used to do with the Big Tahuna, but, you know, I guess Kenny's not even on there anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't know what's going on with that thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, they opened a new Facebook page and everything.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well.
Do you have one guy you usually go the mothership stuff
with? No, I mean, I started that stuff out the first time Rick and all of us did it. You know, was with the Big Tahuna in another boat, and that guy moved on. But at this point, I'm continually talking to more captains that are becoming more open-minded with it.
Yeah.
Because in order eventually for it to be semi-successful is to have a variety of boats that you could pick from based upon that weather, because people get busy and they might not be available.
Yeah.
Someone might be working on his boat.
Right.
You know,
you need a bunch of guys.
You really need a bunch. And I actually had a meeting last week with a gentleman who's bringing a boat down.
To have them all just kind of maybe incorporate that, start incorporating that with their trips. I mean, that would be ideal.
You've also got guys that, dude, the guys, a lot of guys with your teak boards and your teak decks don't the real nice charter boats aren't
with the kayaks.
Yeah, they absolutely want nothing to do with your kayak inside.
So it's
to
ride. Right,
oh yeah, to, dude, you need meat wagons, basically.
yeah.
Well, charter boats. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Guys, there's some guys. Some of the guys with the teak upper boards would consider it. I assume, but dude, these guys that take the time to. Like, treat mm-hmm. all this wood on the top and the decks of their boats. They're not trying to.
Yeah,
that's a dent. That's a dent almost every time.
Yeah,
and you know scratches what I mean?
From the kayak.
They're not heavy.
Yeah.
They're not heavy, but that's a dent every time. I mean, they ride out. You know,
And that's the thing, and it's
they're laid cool against
that you brought this up, because even like this captain I met with that's moving this boat down to Hatteras. And he wants to do this. He had approached me at the Great Bridge Fishing Flea Market. And we got to talking. And so I met the actual owner of the boat the other night. And we're talking. And he's so, what we want to do is to design almost like a field goal system that'll just go right down into the flush rod mounts on the side of these big boats. And then you could get like two boats within the field goal right there. Alongside of the boat. It's not beating the boat.
It's not really in the boat.
It's
right?
not even in the
Dude,
boat.
Dude, if you're not fishing off of the boat, you could run posts across that bitch
and almost like the top of your car.
No Dude, shit.
Right behind the fly.
It's like something they can just put on and off
it's almost like your big old Yakima rack right on the back.
Yeah. And on and off. Boom. Yeah. Okay,
goes right down in the
road. We got kayaks.
Yeah. Boom, at one point, that's something like, if you got enough captains that were worth, like, letting you put them in there, because it wouldn't matter, the rod holder distance isn't going to matter that much on these fly bridge boats. You put this post in that goes across between the two that you can attach. Yeah. I mean, you get enough captains interested, it's almost worth it getting one for the company to have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's...
So...
And universal on it.
As opposed to just putting one on each side, if you're not... gonna fit, and especially if they are gonna fish off the boat, they're not gonna fish off the boat with all the kayaks in the boat anyway.
Right.
It's not gonna work. So you got the kayaks out of the way. These things come right back down. You know, they come apart in an L shape, set to the side, and then you can put rods off the back, because a lot of times people do, the mate will be fishing off the boat when the kayaks in the water. I mean, those guys love to fish too, and they don't get to fish every day.
But even when you were down there, you guys struck out, but then you started fishing from the boat, didn't you?
No, I didn't go on that, man.
Oh, that was Rob and them, right?
Yeah, okay. No, I don't know.
They had gone out. They had tried to do something. Rob Choi had gone with them, and they all struck out, and then they, you know, ended up fishing from the boat, and that's another reason of, let's see what we can develop to optimize the day in case you get out there. And I've never struck out on the kayak.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to find an albacore or an amberjack. You're not going to strike out.
Yeah, Rob was talking about that. That's when they put the green stick out and went meat hunting on the blackfin tunas and just filled the boat up with them, had them coming out of the cooler.
If you had a good way to hold those boats, then you're able to do that still comfortably and say, okay, well, we struck out on the kayaks, but we're getting our money's worth because now we're loading up on them on the back of the
boat. Yeah, I mean, you could drop them down off of that, but as far as... If you put them,
Sometimes it's just good old-fashioned sitting back and fabricating. And I talked about this with Rick after the very first time.
When you talked about field goal, that's what I thought, is if you put them on either side of this 13-foot-wide rig, you could put your kayaks wide range. Here we go, like right behind the fly bridge.
The only problem with that would be is if you're wider than the beam, you end up being on a boat that's wider than the beam. You're gonna have kayaks sticking out. If you're trying to punch through an inlet or do something, that's just gonna get ugly.
Mm. Yeah, no, you'd have to like.
Yeah, they'll probably have a pretty big.
Yeah, you're not going out on the Boston Whaler.
Right, but I know I understand. I'm just saying you gotta have a pretty large beam in the back to do it.
Yeah, those boats that are coming in and out of that inlet every day got large beams.
Oh yeah. But, yeah, I mean, and that's the way I kind of want to go. I want to see the offshore stuff get more. I want to see guys in Hatteras waters pushing them. It's closer than running out of Virginia Beach.
Yeah, it is.
Oh Lord.
And it's consistent. That's the thing. You
get out there to the rock pile or one of the towers.
And you're going to catch something.
Something.
Right.
That's the thing.
And like you said, to have it where it's that easy where you can go boom, 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 where like it... Oh, they come in all the morning charter and they go, okay, we got kayaks at noon. Put the thing on, put them in, let's go.
Well, see, like he said, you know, with the amberjacks and everything, sure, you don't get that excited about an amberjack. When you're in a kayak, I'm excited about an amberjack. Yeah. I will tell you.
The first one.
Yeah. Dude, Rob and I, things. One time, Rob and I went
doink,
out.
Doink, doink, doink. Yeah. As far as you got off the bottom, that's how far they're going to go. An amberjack goes like this. You jig, you jig, you jig, 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 jig. Hook. Doink, 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 doink. As far as they're going to go to the bottom, you reel up a few turns, doink, doink, and then you get circles. Well, and then they turn around and they try and fight again, and they just doink, doink. I mean, when they pull, they're really strong.
Yeah.
Rob and I got into some...
Really, really predictable, because they do the exact same thing. It's like they train for that shit.
Rob and I were getting into some monsters... and like 300 foot of water off this, what's called the Clark Rack. And the Clark Rack was sunk in World War II. And it's a big boat. It's a huge ship. And it's sitting perfectly straight up and down on the bottom.
Huh.
And like 250, 280 foot of water. And sure, we were right there. We were like a quarter mile off of it. And we were hanging amberjacks. We never turned. They would spin that boat around, and I could never get the rod up. I mean, these were stud, dude, 70, all, 80 pound.
Dude, that's the biggest one I've ever seen on Hatteras this year.
And dragging us, never turning it, just like this. Hold on for the quarter mile, and you get right. So you know when you were getting over the wreck. Bink. There you go. I mean, yeah. He was running right into it.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a hole that he's shooting into, running for cover, but I mean, never turned him.
Yeah.
And I didn't get tired. You get tired of losing $20 jigs, you know.
Yeah.
But I never got tired of hooking them and getting towed for that. Like,
that's another thing about the charters. They're like, man, you can bring your own tackle. You load six kayaks on the back and go blackfin tuna fishing, and the tax man is real bad. Things get real ugly for the charter real fast if you ain't brought your own jigs.
Yeah, when you're doing it from a kayak, definitely, because you're going to lose some stuff.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, you're fast, and you can do it fast. You're not as fast as that boat on that jigging platform. I mean, you can really take big swipes at them.
Yeah. Well, because our angle is here.
Yeah. Yeah, you can take big swipes at them, get them, because the black fins aren't big.
No.
I mean, they tell you when they really start digging, if you don't want the sharks to eat them, just put your thumb on the spool. They're not big enough to break the tackle. Cool. They feel like they are, but they're not big enough to break it.
No.
You're fishing with 80-pound, 100-pound leader and 50 to 65 or 85-pound braid. These even up to 30-pound, you know, 30, 35-pound is the biggest, unless you're looking to push records.
Yeah.
They're not. They can't break that shit, man.
Yeah.
They can't pull it apart. As long as you're not your knots, your terminal tackle are good, they can't pull it apart. No. Just put your thumb on the spool, man. You know it's a black fin. Just put your thumb on the spool. He can't break it. Just
it's a vibrating.
Fight. Oh boy, it's ugly. I mean, they'll really put it to you.
Yeah.
But they can't break it.
Yeah.
So they do their thing, and then you just get on them. As soon as you get a chance, stop it. I mean, that's what Kenny always told us on the Big Tahuna. He was like, man, if you don't want your black fins to get eaten, stop them. As soon as you get a chance, just stop them. They can't break it.
I think one thing offshore in the mothership thing that you do out of there was I would like to do dolphin stuff where it's like light tackles cast on the lines and stuff like that.
Rob and I were out there.
Yeah.
And, We were catching them on trout rods with trout jigs.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what
four-inch curly tail, red head.
They don't sound.
They're not super crazy, and they jump.
No.
Right?
They jump, though. They are super crazy, but they don't sound.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that a bull dolphin is not strong. A true bull dolphin.
You don't need heavy, super heavy tackle.
No, you wouldn't in a kayak. Why not? It's giant polyball. Have fun towing me.
Yeah.
They don't, I've never fought a dolphin that really sounded. I mean, I've had them swim down 30, 40 feet, but never like,
right.
Pew! You know, not like tuna.
Once that's
going to the bottom.
Yeah. I wouldn't hesitate fishing once again, one of my $20, $3,000 or $4,000 reels.
Right. With a low profile bait casting.
12 or 14 pound test for a dolphin in a heartbeat and a bull from the kayak, because it's going to be all drag. He's never going to burn you out.
Right.
No.
But so that day we were really in a small class of, you know, bailers and a couple gaffers in there. But, Yeah, I mean, we're trout rods. Mm-hmm. Same rods I catch puppy drum, I'm catching dolphin.
Yeah.
That's a blast, man. Yeah. It really is.
If anything, you know, the mothership trips, I just can't afford
those. That's see, it's and expensive. See, dude, my buddy Howard, when we went out the other day, it was $30.
Yeah.
See, if we can get him to take the kayak, something like that, when he gets on the... And he loves to go out of Hatteras, dude. If he would let us just take one, so that we could fish, all of us would get a shot or two.
Yeah,
then, I mean, if we want to troll around and fish and catch a bunch of dolphin, that's cool.
But
they get down there so good. Dude, you can roll up to a weed line
and
just throw...
That's what I like to do.
And they'll never get tired of the kayak. You'll never spook them with the kayak.
Oh, all they'll do is try to hang out underneath of you.
You might drift off of them, but
you're...
You might get them to drift with you.
You're a piece of flossum just like everybody else out there.
They might follow you for a little while.
They're never going to get spooked to you. My friend that... He was kind of a maniac. His thought was he wanted to make what he called the offshore duck blind. And he wanted to take a 4x8 sheet of plywood, cut a hole up towards one end of it, put nice size floats on all four corners, and go out there and drop this sucker, you know, and be able to get along the weed lines and spearfish like that, like I'm going to lean off the side. Sultan's coming for the plywood eventually. With that theory, drifting the weed line, I'm like, that's really kind of awesome.
Yeah.
You know, because it's true. The kayak's the same way. Kayak on the weed line, things are coming to check you out. They might be cool. They might not be cool.
He stores this plywood in the creek down the house. It's got barnacles and shit growing off the bottom. Yeah, it looks real natural.
Yep.
He just throws it out there.
Well, see, one of the things these spear fishermen show me, the trick they make flashers. So that they can be up on the surface, and it might be 100 foot long or whatever, and it's got mirrors attached to it. And they'll buy their mirrors at the dollar store, little cosmetic mirrors and stuff. Just start ripping it through the water column to see what will come off a wreck or off the bottom to investigate all this flashing.
CDs also can do
CDs,
do space CDs.
And sure enough, be able to do that. I would love to do it just to film it. I would love to do it just to film it. Just start ripping flashers, down this massive.
Dude, those troll cam. Those troll pro cameras attached to dredges.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah, that is
pretty
cool.
Shit just comes in like really. Things are really, really mad at schools of bait fish out there.
Yeah.
Anything out there is really, really
that's
mad
what's
at
so
bait
nice.
Fish.
That's what I really like about all the little technology now is you really get to see things you never saw before. You never got to see what was going on in the dredge. You know,
dude, yellow fins like this.
Yeah.
All day long. Coming up at the bottom of the dredge. You never see that shit from the boat. Mm-mm. All day long when you're offshore.
Yeah.
There's like yellow fins and bonitas and shit like
these
this.
Babies.
Big. Just coming up at your dredge to check it out all day long.
The one of the Mako coming up picking all the ballyhoo clean off the hooks without ever getting hooked. Did you see that one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was insane. I mean, it's nothing. He comes in at 25 miles an hour, grabs the back of it, rips it off the hook. He disappears, comes back. I mean, it's... Yeah.
Houdini, man. Yeah. Like the wahoo that comes in, dude. I mean, I've literally been
offshore
trolling.
Technology. I love the technology when we get to see
you hear nothing, see nothing, and the short rigger is flapping in the wind. Wahoo. Cut through your shit. You didn't hear nothing, you didn't see nothing. The short rigger is just in the wind.
Just went...
Yep.
The late great Jose Wajabe, I got to see him speak one time in the Florida Keys, and you know, one of the things he emphasized was he loved to get in the water and watch the fish. And he said, I want to see them in their habitat, you know, and I never forgot that. And this is the type of technology now that we're using, you know, to be able to see what's going on in different situations.
Well, that's my connection with Reds. I've been able to sight cast them to them so much and see them in their environment. And we're, you know, I've gotten a connection with them in that sense because I think I feel like I know what they're doing. I'm seeing them look at stuff and seeing them look at me and react to stuff. I've been seeing it more so when you're blind casting and something happened.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, so, you know, so that's why I feel like connected with them because I've been able to learn so much, but just by watching them. By seeing what they've done, and that's the same thing. And with the technology now, well, shit, like these, the GoPro went down on the tog fishing, and Lee didn't want to tog fish anymore after that. He was just because there was, he's sitting there looking at his bait and like picking at his bait, just so it just like there's so many tog down there, you wouldn't know that was that.
I mean, Ken did it they went out to a wreck a few weeks ago. They finally got hooked up to the wreck like late in the afternoon. They caught 11 togs, 11 keepers, and the biggest one was 20 pounds. Yeah. They went back 2 weeks later. He got hooked up to it finally. They caught no togs. They caught sea bass all day. They put a GoPro down. Sea bass everywhere. Same place.
Ah.
So weird. But he's putting them down in his tog spots still. So,
yeah.
There's fish everywhere.
But that's where, you know, you got to take it if you're going to really worry about it and sweat it to getting that extra data of, like, okay, what's the water temperature? What's the wind? What's
somebody did phase? Ask what we use for water temperature, website-wise. Rutgers and, is it Ocean Temp, I think?
Yeah,
Rutgers. I have a friend of mine that I ask to send Rutgers. Me, like, a friend of mine that pays for a really nice service that if I want a really good inshore shot every now and then or something like that, all I do is ask.
Yeah, the free one that I have on my Rutgers page. That's Rutgers, yeah.
Yeah, I use a lot of Rutgers, man. Yeah. And that thing's usually spot on.
Then for Ocean Temps, NOAA, too, the buoys.
Yeah,
the buoys. And the weather buoys are like... up to date accurate. Yeah. They update what every 45 seconds or something.
Yeah, but I have the First Island, Kit the Peak, and Willoughby.
Yeah,
on to check them. Yeah, you can look on those. And that's on my links page. But yeah, anything like that, there's always information.
Then there's the wind for all weather. I think has the one with the arrows, small arrows in certain locations.
Right.
Some of those locations have water temperature because they're on a buoy.
Yeah.
Wind speed, air temperature.
Yeah, spring and fall is when I really pay attention to water temps, and then summer is just like summer.
It's hot.
It's hot. Just go deep.
Sheephead fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, are you driving back?
Oh, yeah. I'm southbound.
It's 9:30, man. Let's call it.
All right.
Well, yeah, definitely, man. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And this is... it's OuterBanksKayakFishing.com.
That's right.
Simple.
Check us out. All my information is right there.
On Facebook, too, and I'll have a link up. On the Facebook link. And
awesome service for the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you.
Yep. You got a good fishery and a good thing, and you got the kayaks, and get everybody out there and get
them out. I'm just lucky. I'm in the right spot. And, you know, watching like Mark and some of the other guys up here, that guy that said, oh, you know, I was in a tourist area. I thought I was going to really be big. Down there, people are looking for that stuff. They're looking at the hang gliding and the kiteboarding and stuff. So they're looking for what they consider to be an obscure sport almost. Mm-hmm.
And you, it's a destination. It's not Lake Virginia Beach. You're down there, and the beach and water is the only thing to do down there.
Right.
Yeah. And you have a lot of options, you know, so many options down there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to see and a lot to do. And if they're on a weekend, it's a very short weekend. But yeah. But if they want to get out. Yeah.
Hey, but I get a lot of people anymore from even your end of town, you know, here in Norfolk, Chesapeake, Tidewater, that just come down specifically for that.
Yeah, I'll run them and they come home that afternoon.
They know that.
You don't have the time to put in down there. It's a beautiful place to go fish. And if you don't have the time to put in down there, spend the money on a charter to have a good time. I mean, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
I've learned that in offshore fishing. I'm an idiot. I say I quit every time, and then a year later or 8-10 months later, somebody will talk me into going again.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things. Like I hate it every time, but I still keep going.
Right.
But if I would just not and go with a charter every few months or twice a year, because I've done that.
Yeah.
I've been through that phase where I went with a charter twice a year for a few years, and it. Really, I mean, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Those guys, we haven't had the most phenomenal days sometimes.
That's because
they know how to make a great day.
And they're out there every day. And that's
they try really hard.
You have a bead on the fish, and just like right now, you got reds, like as many reds as you want to catch in the day. So you got that going on right now, and after the storm, you'll figure out what's happening right after that. And
if you don't like this school, we'll paddle to the other one.
Yeah.
The next one. These ones aren't red enough. We'll go catch the next school.
Yeah, so, yeah, man, thank you for being on here, man.
I appreciate it, bro.
Get you back on here again. I love you coming up here. That's awesome. Cool. All right, thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time. OuterBanksKayakFishing.com. Later.